Thank you for joining us here at Christ Fellowship for our online message podcast.
I'm excited to be with you guys this morning. My name is Richie Christie. If you have no idea who I am brand new here. That is probably why. I'm our new high school and young adult pastor, and man, I am so excited to be with you this morning. You know, the reason I'm here with you is because Derek, you know, he had a tough loss last night and couldn't make it. You know, I think he's in bed crying. So we're going to pray for him because he needs it. You know, it's rough. You know, losing to Alabama is one thing, right? Losing to Purdue, pretty bad. All right. See, I'm from Big Ten country. All right. I'm a Michigan State fan, which we had a bad day yesterday too. But I will say, in Big Ten country, we call Purdue Purdon't. And man, if you get beat by Purdon't, like, you don't belong anywhere. So it was rough. So hey, he texted me this morning. He was like, "Feel free to make fun of me." I was like, "Dude, don't worry. I'm gonna. All right. We know why you're not here this morning." You know, but he kicked off a new series last week for us called Risk that we're jumping into. Actually, before, I don't want to miss this. Like I said, I'm brand new for our high school and young adult ministry. Are there any 18 to 28 year olds in the house? Lift those hands up. Yes, my people. All right. So here's the deal. November 8th. We're going to be having our first gathering together, kind of sharing what we're hoping God's going to do in our community. So if you are between the ages of 18 and 28, I want you there. Or if you know someone, get them there. It's going to be a blast. But like I said, Derek kicked us off into this new series called Risk, and he thought he literally put that into practice by kicking the new guy on stage. So I'm here this morning with you. So if this goes bad, blame it on Derek, because he's the one that took the risk. But man, I really am excited to be here. It's been amazing. If you didn't know, we moved down, my wife Jen and I, we moved down here from Detroit Labor Day weekend, and so that was a risk. We jumped down here not knowing a soul, and it has been absolutely amazing, but we thought, hey, it wasn't a big enough risk to just move down here. Why don't we buy a puppy? So we bought a puppy last Friday. I think we got a picture of my wife Jenna and our new dog Izzo. Look at that. That's right after he peed. It's a good boy. Right? Good boy. But man, I have to say, being here so far, it's been amazing. Like, it really, really has. This doesn't have to necessarily do with risk today. I just want to say, as someone new to this family here, like, it's been unbelievable for Jenna and I to move down here not knowing anybody. We tell everybody back home, like, it literally feels like a dream. We showed up Sunday night at 8 p.m. on Labor Day weekend to move in. Our trailer for our car tire popped. Like, it was a doozy getting down here. But man, we showed up and there were 30 people at our house to help move us in on Sunday night of Labor Day weekend. Just unbelievable. But that just shows like what this place is about. And so I'll even say this, if you're new here like us, you're wondering, man, are these people legit? They're legit. All right. Like I have not, like it's just been a privilege to be under Gina and Derek, just their authenticity, the way they love and lead and just the families and staff around here. So I just want to say thank you. You know, really just for the first month or so being here, it's been amazing being here. But Derek, as he kicked us off last week into this idea of risk, he started off sharing the story of Abraham and Isaac, right? Classic story, really good. But he had a definition of risk that I loved, and I want to keep it in our mind today. He said that kingdom risk is I hear God and follow him. Right? And so we really jumped into this idea of what does risk look like? How do we take it? The benefits of it, things like that. And so to kind of bridge the gap here, here's what I want to talk about on week two is the risk of not risking. Right? Because we know we should risk, but what is the risk? What's the cost of actually not risking? And we're going to be in Revelation 2 and 3 today. We'll get there in a minute, but if you want to flip your Bibles there, you can get ready. But I was thinking through this, and this is how I was thinking through it, is how many of you guys have ever jumped into something risky or made a decision that was risky, and then like 5 minutes into it or in the middle of it, you're like, this is the worst decision I ever made. Anybody? Yeah? So this happened to Jenna and I a few years ago, maybe not for her, but for me. She comes to me, I'm sitting on the couch one night, and she's like, babe, I think I want to run a half marathon. I don't know why I talk like that. My wife doesn't talk like that. But it's like, she goes, I think I want to run a half marathon. I was like, that's awesome. I am so excited for you. That is great. And she looks at me and she goes, no, I want us to run it. I was like, who's us? Me? I'm 250 pounds. Like, I'm not running anywhere but the bathroom. Like, I don't know if we're going to be able to do this. And she goes, no, I want to see. And fellas, you know there's a moment here where I go, do I say yes or do I willingly put myself in the doghouse, right? And so I'm like, all right, I'll do it, right? We go out and buy the shoes, do the dang thing, and we get rolling. And so we actually got plugged into this kind of group of runners that were all running the Detroit half marathon, and you'd run together so you wouldn't be sucking wind alone. And so we show up to the Saturday morning run, our first one. We're a little late in the game. We show up and they do this like kind of devotional thing. And there's like 100 people there. I'm like, this is kind of cool. You guys are crazy, but this is kind of cool. And show up, and the guy, after he shares his devotional, he goes, so today we're going to run 5 miles. 5 miles? What? Like, I haven't run 5 miles since ever. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this, right? And I look at Jenna, I'm like, I'm going to kill you. Like, or I'm going to die, one or the other. And so she's like, babe, you got it. You got this. I'm like, all right, fine. So we start running, you know, like a half mile in. I'm like, all right, this is all right. Like, kind of heavy breathing, but we can do this. And get about a mile and a half in, I start to feel something in my hip, right? I'm like, this hurts a little bit, right? Get a little bit further. I'm not kidding you. By the time that was over, mentally, I had to stop every quarter of a mile because my leg was numb. Like, it was dead. And I got to the end of it. I was like, this is horrible. Like, I'm not doing this, right? So the middle of this huge risk of running this half marathon, I'm in the middle of it. I'm like, this is the worst decision I've ever made in my life, right? So long story short, we finish and we're doing all the training. We're running and it comes to race day. And it's in downtown Detroit. And actually, what was really cool is the part of the race, you actually got to go over the bridge to Canada and come back through the tunnel under the river. And so it was really cool, right? And I'll say this, man, that one of the coolest moments of our marriage was probably running that half marathon together. Like, it was absolutely amazing. Just a whirlwind experience. Only one I'll ever do, but really cool. And it's the funny thing about risk, right? Risk requires you to move. Right? It requires you to get uncomfortable, to start going somewhere, right? And often when we're asked to take a risk or we're weighing the cost of this thing, like, we don't really want to do it. But I'll say, man, if I didn't step into that, man, I would have never experienced that amazing moment of crossing that finish line with my wife, right? And so now I got this medal that I'd look at and we'll never earn another one for running that race. But I think that's the tension sometime in risk, right? As we weigh it. Like, we get down and we go, like, is this really worth it? Like, do I really want to do this thing? Whatever God's asking me to do, whatever's on my mind, whatever the risk is, right? Do I really want to do this? And here's what I'll say is, man, that even riskier than taking a risk is the risk of not risking. That even riskier than taking a risk is the risk of not risking. Because when I don't risk, I stay comfortable, I get complacent, I stay still, and I get stuck. And here's what I know is that, man, that at the end of the day, and this is really what I want to get into today, is the risk of not risking is that you risk your love for Jesus. The risk of not risking is that you could risk your love for Jesus. So let me show you what I mean a little bit. And so we're, like I said, we're going to be in Revelation 2 and 3, which is risky, right? Youth pastor coming out with a book of Revelation. Chill, buddy, right? But this book, it can be confusing, right? Like, I think a lot of us have opened it and we're like, I have no idea what's being said, but it's cool. And the best way I describe it to people is, how many of you guys ever had a dream and then tried to explain your dream? Right? Just like, I don't know how to do that. That's really what this book is, right? If someone came to you and said, hey, write down all your dreams, right? It's hard to put that into words, right? What you're seeing. But this book of Revelation is really one giant kind of dream and vision this guy, John, has, right? From Jesus. And he writes it down and he explains it. And at the beginning of this kind of vision and dream, Jesus addresses these seven churches. He addresses these seven churches, and he says that they're like these lampstands. They're shining brightly over the earth, that when he looks out, he sees these seven golden lampstands, right? Which is correct, because Jesus calls us the light of the world. But what's interesting in these seven churches is all seven of these churches are in modern-day Turkey, right? Middle East. Modern-day Turkey. And so Jen and I actually in college got the opportunity to spend some time in Turkey on some mission trips, actually a full summer there, doing ministry among Muslim college students. It was really interesting, you know, meeting the believers there. There was one guy named Salih that I got pretty close with, and we would talk. And actually right now, in Turkey, they would say that the population is about 98 million people. And of that 98 million people, they would say that 0.2 identify as Christian. It's interesting to me, right? Because here in the last book of the Bible, we have Jesus calling out or talking to like basically the top seven churches in the world. And they're all in modern day Turkey. And you fast forward today, and it's like the lights went out. What happened? Right? And so I would talk to Salih about this, and he would always point back to this chunk in Revelation. He would essentially say, man, if you look at this, that Jesus charged them into things, and he would say, if you don't jump into the things I'm asking you to jump into, the light's going to go out. And it did. And it's interesting. It's really interesting because he said, and a lot of the believers over there would say, that the reason the lights went out is because they didn't risk. That over the centuries of political change, of cultural change, of the landscape shifting, that at some point along the way, people got a little comfortable, got a little complacent, and these once solid churches, man, the light just went out, and now today we have really one of the most unreached countries in the world. That even as you talk to missionaries today, like the Jesus movement is exploding in the Middle East, all like outside of Turkey. Turkey is just dry. It's tough. It's tough. Really, really hard work. But I want to look at these churches because I think it's interesting that they were once amazing and a light on a hill and a lampstand for the world to look at, but now today they're not. And I'm like, why? How did they get there? How did they shift to that place, right? And so we're going to look at two of these today in Revelation 2 and 3. And really what I think we're going to see is that the risk to not risking is also that you'll live comfortable and you'll live complacent. And I think that's what he addresses with these churches. And so this first church in Revelation 2, verse 1 to 5, the risk of not risking, number one, is that you could get comfortable. And this is what he says. He addresses them and he says, to the angel of the church in Ephesus write, the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks among the seven golden lampstands. I know your works, your toil and your patient endurance and how you cannot bear with those who are evil. But have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not, and have found them to be false. I know that you are enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake, and that you have not grown weary. But I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen and repent and do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place unless you repent. Right? This is in Ephesus. It's crazy. Right? And so this beginning, Jesus is addressing him and he actually starts off encouraging him. He's encouraging him and he's like, hey man, you are fighting the good fight. You're enduring patiently. You're not growing weary. Like, I'm proud of you. You're fighting for good things. But then his tone switches. In verse 4, his tone switches and he says, but I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. You know, John's kind of getting at this idea here that man, you're doing church well. Like, you're fighting for the right things. You're trying to live holy. But somehow in the midst of that fight, you're missing the point. That you've abandoned the love you have at first. How sobering is that? I know for me, like being in full-time ministry, how sobering is it that I could be doing the work of the ministry and miss the point of the ministry in the process? That I could be striving and fighting and doing good things for Jesus and miss Jesus in the process, right? Miss the point. What's the point? He says the point is to know him, to love him. The point isn't to work for him or to do things for him or just to serve him. The point is that you wouldn't just love a church, or you wouldn't just love a pastor, or you wouldn't just love whatever. No, the point is that you would love the person and presence of Jesus. Man, like, I wonder, could I get so good or so comfortable or so used to something in my faith that it actually doesn't really require faith anymore? That something that once was a risk, I've now gotten pretty used to. So I don't really need to do it anymore. It doesn't require risk. So what in your faith is uncomfortable for you right now? right? What's been a journey of uncomfortability or that balance of comfortableness, right? I know for me, and we've talked about this a lot here lately, but this idea of hearing God's voice, that years ago when I first heard about this, how I was kind of saved and raised in the faith, man, like the idea that God spoke is really weird. Like, I don't know about that. A little spooky, a little out there. Like, I don't know if I'm into that. And so for a really long time, I would just either ignore it or not engage in it or whatever because it made me uncomfortable. Like, that's too risky. It was funny because I remember I would be like, I don't know if this is God or is this me? Like, I don't want to get deceived. Like, what if the enemy's talking to me? Like, all this stuff. And so I would just not do it. And there's a quote by a guy named Brad Jersak that I think just sums up my journey with this. And he says this. He says, sometimes we're afraid we will be fooled or deceived by listening. I can tell you right now, if you don't listen, you are already fooled and deceived. And like, I realized on this journey of hearing God's voice that it brought me always to a place of, I had to have faith. I had to risk to believe what he was saying or to step into it. And it made me uncomfortable. And the reason I didn't want to do it is because I actually liked being comfortable. I liked holding all the cards in my hands. I liked knowing what would take place. And this idea was too difficult for me to wrap my head around. But it started to change my life. That as I started to understand this idea of hearing God's voice, that it elevated my faith like crazy. And I would even say this, that Jenna and I getting to this place, which we didn't even know Kingsport, Tennessee existed in like May. Man, us getting here actually started with me sitting down with a friend in a coffee shop and literally asking God, do you still want us in Detroit? He said, no. Man, if I didn't risk and believe that, I don't know if we would be here today, right? As uncomfortable as it was, as new as it was, I don't know if we would be here. And so John's getting at this idea, and he says that, man, this comfortability could cost you. It could really cost you. But he gets into another thing in the next chapter. He says it's not just comfortability that will cost you, but complacency could kill you as well. In Revelation 3, again, the second idea of the risk of not risking is that you'll get complacent. Starting in verse 14, it says, and to the angel of the church in Laodicea, write the words of the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of God's creation. I know your works. You were neither cold nor hot. Would that you either be cold or hot. So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. For you say, I am rich, I have prospered, and I need nothing. Not realizing that you are wretched, pitiable, poor, blind, and naked, I counsel you to buy from me gold refined by fire, so that you may be rich in white garments, so that you may clothe yourself, and the shame of your nakedness might not be seen, and salve to anoint your eyes, so that you may see. He's getting at this idea, man, that you've drifted, you've gotten lukewarm, and he's inviting him into something. He says this, he says, those whom I love, I reprove and discipline. So be zealous and repent. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him and he with me. See, it's this famous passage, maybe one of the most famous passages in this whole book, this idea of being lukewarm. Like we've heard, maybe you've heard that, if you've been in church, don't be lukewarm, right? But he actually gets at this idea of how they got to lukewarm. How did they get there? Like what caused that? And it says this, he says in verse 17, for you say, I am rich, I prosper, and I need nothing. This idea of complacency. You see, complacency is interesting because complacency isn't that you just be like coasting, but it's that you're aware that you're coasting and you're really okay with it. Like I'm good. I'm good where I'm at. And he's saying he's even saying this church is admitting, and I'm rich, I've prospered, I don't need anything. Like I am okay with where I'm at. And here's what happens is that when we just exist, when we get complacent, when we just kind of ride it out, stay still, don't move. I don't know about you, but when I've been in situations like that in my life, where I've just stayed still, stayed complacent, my faith is like died. Like I'm not pushed out. I'm not required to take risk. I've gotten safe, right? And so what is this idea of faith? How would we define faith, right? Faith, how I would define it, is believing in something unseen, right? Like faith is, at the end of the day, is believing in something you can't see. Hebrews 11:1 tells us it's the assurance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. Believing in something you can't see. So how do I increase my faith then? How does faith grow in my life? Seeing something that I previously didn't see, right? Or experiencing something that I previously did not know. That's how my faith grows. I mean, think about it this way, right? You get a hunch, you get a whisper, you get an idea, you get a thought, whatever it is from the Lord, right? He's talking to you, right? Now I get that thing, and so it's going to take faith. Man, do I believe this was from God? Do I believe this is a thing? Am I going to step out and do this? Do I want to do this, right? And as I step out in faith and I see that thing come to life, my faith explodes, right? It starts to grow, right? I get this hunch from God that maybe I should say this to somebody, or maybe I should love on somebody this way, or maybe I should do this or do that. And then I do it and I watch God move. Man, that's where faith explodes. So guess where faith dies? By staying still, not moving, not stepping out, not risking, right? It's this interesting concept, right? So this idea of risk, actually, we don't have to be afraid of it, because risk is really this invitation, not just this obligation that I have to do because I'm a good Christian, right? It's an invitation into experiencing greater faith and greater experience with Jesus. And if I don't do it, my faith could die. And you kind of see this with the story of Revelation, that this church got complacent and it's dead. The light went out in a way. Man, I've never seen this more clearly than So we're going to be doing this with our high school students here soon, but we would go on a mission trip every year with our at our old church. We'd take a group of students down on this specific mission trip. We would go to Panama City Beach, spring break hotspot, and we'd go on spring break on purpose, because we would go and we would love on spring breakers, share Jesus, share our faith, do it kind of whatever the Lord was inviting us into. But kind of the model of setting up this mission trip too is that we'd go out in the afternoon, because no one on spring break is at the beach before noon, and we'd go out in the afternoon, so we'd take the morning to kind of cultivate this intimacy with God with our students. That we'd give them about an hour of alone time with God. We'd get them in small groups, and then we'd do some ministry training time. And it was really teaching this idea of living from overflow, that I can't give away what I haven't received, right? And so we do that every morning. And one of the mornings, or not one of the mornings, every morning they would ask some questions that we kind of gave, just kind of listening prayer stuff. And so one of the questions we'd have the students ask was, God, is there anyone you want me to look for or be aware of as I head out on the beach to share the gospel today? And we did this as a point of risk. We wanted to see faith grow and students step out and risk. And so I'll be honest with you, most of the things that students thought they saw, we never saw. But we would do it as this idea of building faith, right? And so this one morning, this guy, Jack, comes to me and he says, we're sharing in small group. He goes, man, I think I actually saw something pretty clear this morning. It was a little different. He said, I saw a guy with like a bucket hat on and this Allen Iverson jersey. And so we're like, all right, well, sweet. I guess we'll look for it today. You know, just keep your eyes peeled, right? We're trying to teach this idea of keeping my like spiritual eyes open to heaven and seeing what God wants to do. And so long story short, we go out sharing on the beach that day. It was a great day. And we get to the end of it, though, and we have to get back to the van, so we've got to get back for dinner. And Jack hasn't seen this guy, right? He hasn't really talked about it that much of the day. To be honest, I kind of forgot through the day, too. And so we're walking back to the vans on our last leg back, and Jack's walking, and he bumps shoulders with this dude, and he turns around, he looks at him, and he looks at this guy walking away from him. He's got an Allen Iverson jersey on and a bucket hat. And so Jack was like, oh, shoot, right? Like, what should I do, right? And so actually what Jack did is for a minute he kept walking. And then he comes up to me and another one of our leaders, Stephen, and he goes, hey, I think I just saw that guy with the Allen Iverson jersey on and the bucket hat. And we were both looking at him, we're like, then what are you doing here? Like, go talk to him. Like, go do this, right? And so this idea of faith, right? I see what was previously unseen, right? God's inviting me into something, movement, right? Because this idea of movement creating miracles. And so Jack starts to step out, and he goes up to this guy, and he runs up to him, and he goes, dude, hey, man, like, this is, he didn't even know, like, we probably should have trained him on this, but this was kind of his intro, like, hey, this is really weird. I was praying this morning, and we're just asking, I'm on this trip with my church, and we're asking God if there's anyone we want to see on the beach today to talk to. And I saw this morning a guy with an Allen Iverson jersey on and a bucket hat, and I think it was you. And so the guy looks at him, and he goes, oh, my gosh. And he gets in this whole story, and he's like, I'm down here. I'm on spring break with all my buddies, and I've been, like, drinking my brains out. And I literally was praying the other night, like, I hate this, God. If you're real, like, you have to show yourself to me, or I'm not going to believe in you. Right? This kid's from, like, Georgia or something, like, kind of grew up in the church, but he's, like, walking away. And Jack goes, dude, like, I could have talked to anybody else on this beach today, but the Lord highlighted you because he's after you and he loves you and he wants a relationship with you. And so Jack prays with this guy to give his life to Christ, to rededicate his life to Christ. And it was amazing. It was this amazing movement of watching this miracle happen. But the best part about this story, what I love most, is Jack had a choice. Am I going to do it or not? Is this worth it? Should I do this? Should I move in faith this way? Right? And because he did it, he saw this amazing thing. You know what I loved about that, what I love about what we're doing with our students here at Christ Fellowship too, man, is this idea of risky faith, right? Because what I've seen, I haven't been a youth pastor very long, but I've seen that the students that thrive in the next phase of life, that after we launch them out of here after high school, the students that walk with Jesus are the ones who have walked with him in this risky experiential faith. They've actually seen him displayed, right? And not just in their own lives, but from like other generations and other people. And man, what I would say to like our church right now is, man, what if Christ Fellowship was a place where like the next generation got a picture of what risky faith looked like at 30, 40, 50, 60 years old? Because if you look at any study right now, man, if you want to ask the question, what is the risk of not risking? Why don't you ask a whole generation that is walking away from faith in droves? In every study that you look at, one of the greatest reasons is they haven't seen an authentic faith. They don't see like the realness of it. They don't see the risk of it. So what if we could be a place where we show the younger generation what it looks like to passionately pursue and love Jesus? What if we launch students out of Christ Fellowship as like a launching pad, that it wouldn't be a place in college where their faith would die or they get caught up in whatever, but it'd be a place where their faith just ignites and goes and goes and goes. And you know where that starts? It doesn't just start with the youth ministry and the youth pastor. It starts with the family. It starts with the community around them saying, hey, I'm going to show you what it looks like to love and live risky. Not complacent, but moving, right? It's this beautiful, beautiful picture that I think the Lord's inviting us into. But here's the problem with this message. And I was wrestling with this week. Like, it's not enough for me to just get up here and be like, you know, I'm 27 years old. Let me tell you old people what it's about. Don't live complacent. Don't live comfortable. Right? Like, I know that some of you are sitting here. You got more years on me. And you're like, dude, you don't have a clue what life has got for you. I get it. And guess what? You're right. You're right. Right? It's not enough to just be like, hey, don't live complacent. Don't live comfortable. Right? Like, that there's more at stake here. There's more at stake here. That it's not just that, right? And we don't even need, like, I can look at my own marriage and just know that, like, it's not really a good idea for me to get comfortable or complacent for a long period of time because I could fall out of love, right? That actually moving and risking in my marriage and pursuing and loving Jenna is what could really continue that love. And so my question for us then, if it's not that, if it's not just, if the answer isn't just, man, don't be comfortable, don't be complacent, what is it? Like, what are these two things rooted in? This idea of comfortability and complacency. Like, where do those start? How do those begin? You know, it's funny because John tells us, and we can miss it really quickly if we don't see it, but he says in verse 2, or chapter 2, verse 4, he says, you have abandoned the love you had at first. He says again in chapter 3, he says, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I come into him and eat with him and he with me. You see, it's not like this idea of comfortability, of complacency, like they're just symptoms of a greater problem in our lives. That it's not just that I'm comfortable, it's not just that I'm complacent, it's that I've drifted away from my first love. Man, that risk isn't just like a courage problem, it's not just a fear problem, it's not just a complacency problem, it's not a comfortability problem. Risk is a love problem. And Jesus in the scripture, you know, he challenges them, but he comes in at the back end and he goes, man, like I'm saying this because I love you. And I'm standing at the door and I'm knocking. And I'm not knocking to make you feel bad about yourself. I'm knocking because I want your heart again. You've drifted, but I love you. Don't you realize that I love you and I have more than what you're living in? I have more than what you're existing in. At some point, I get it. Life happens. Things got comfortable. Things got complacent. Life happened. But I want to wake you back up to the love you had at first. I want to get you back to the place of fire and passion and zeal and energy towards my spirit and just ignite your love again. Right? And I think sometimes we can look at this and go, man, we can feel bad. Like, yeah, I kind of have lived like that. I have done that. But that's not his heart. He's not saying this so you feel bad about yourself. He's saying this because he's inviting us back to our first love. And so here's the deal, man, is yeah, like the risk and not risking, sure, you could live complacent or comfortable. But even greater than that, the risk and not risking is I risk my love for Jesus. The risk and not risking is I could risk my love for Jesus. So I'm gonna call up the band here as we kind of wrap up. But here's what you need to know is I'm not sharing this like from this posture of like not understanding this. That like this story that he's writing here is like kind of my story. You see, I got saved when I was a sophomore in college. I didn't really grow up in church. Kind of partied my brains out through high school, playing football, continued in college. Had an experience with God that he transformed my life. And I remember the love I had at first. Man, I was on fire. I was passionate. I was hungry to know God, hungry to get in his word, hungry to share the gospel for my friends to know him. Like, I was on fire, right? And so life kind of continues. And my wife, current wife, and I, we get engaged in college, our senior year. And I was all ready to get into full-time ministry and do this thing. But I took a little victory lap and graduated a semester late. And by that time, all my friends had graduated. And I found myself still in East Lansing, but I wasn't in my college ministry anymore. All my community had kind of left me. And this ministry job that we thought we were going to do fell through. And I found myself in this place, like, kind of angry and upset. Like, God, like, I'm on fire for you. Like, you deserve to give me this. And things kind of continued, and I end up with an advertising degree from Michigan State, and I'm applying to jobs, and I can't get a job anywhere, like in any ad agencies and any marketing stuff. And so what ended up happening is we're engaged, and I ended up having to work at like a pizza place just to like make money and get money for the wedding and life. And slowly but surely, and it was on accident, I started to just spend a little less time with God, not love as well. And really there was two kind of huge sin issues I struggled with my whole life. And it was anger and then this pornography addiction that I really felt like I mastered at this point. You know, like we got engaged. I wasn't going to bring that into my marriage. And here I was finding myself drifting back to a place of anger, you know, a little bit more short, and finding myself wrapped up in pornography again months before I'm getting married. And if you know anything about being married, and we were engaged at the time, but I think it had the same thing, is you take your sin out on your wife the most. And I was doing that. And the problem was, is like, she was still like really on fire and loving Jesus. And I was weighing her down and wasn't fighting for our purity. Things weren't going well. And it gets to the end, towards the end of our engagement, we're having these wedding showers. And the night before our first wedding shower, we get in this huge fight. And it was really because of me. Because of the mistakes I had made and decisions I had done. And I had screwed up in purity again. I was just like not helping the situation. And so we get in this huge fight. And I decide I'm going to drive over to her and win her back. And we're going to be good. And I pull into her driveway and ask her to come out. And we're just sitting in the car. And I'm apologizing. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And she looks at me. And I'll never forget this. This was a huge shift in my life. She looked at me and she said, "You're not the man I thought I was going to marry." I was like broken. And I was like, well, we gotta figure this out. You know, we got a first wedding shower tomorrow. And she's like, I don't know if I'm going to go. I was like, what do you, like, you have to go. Like, I can't show up to that alone. And she left that night. And she said, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll talk to you in the morning. And she got out of the car. And I remember sitting in the car, just bawling my eyes out. Like, I'm like terrified. I'm going to lose the woman of my dreams. Everything's falling apart. And I felt like it was all my fault. And I couldn't do anything. And I was frustrated and I was angry. And so I drive home. My roommates are all watching TV in the living room and they can probably see I'm crying. And I just go right up to my room. I go up to my room and I do the only thing that I knew. Like, I just felt prompted to do this. And I got to the side of my bed and I got down on my knees. And out of just like utter hopelessness, just said, Jesus, help me. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to fix this. It's out of my control. Like, I'm afraid she's going to leave. Like, I don't know what to do. And he whispered something to me that changed my life. And he said this. He said, this is the place I wanted you the whole time. On your knees, in full surrender, back to your first love. Like, this is the place where I do my best work in your dirtiest moments. So yeah, Richie, you drifted a little bit. Yeah, you got comfortable. You got complacent. You didn't press into the things that you did at first. And it wasn't, you didn't even mean to, but you did it. But this is where I want you. I want you back in this place where I can ignite your love for me again. Because I love you. And so I'm standing at the door and I'm knocking. And how do you view Jesus knocking? Like, is he knocking like, open up. What's wrong with you? Wake up. No. He's knocking. It's like this knock of love, this invitation, like, open the door, son. Like, come back. I'm not mad at you. I get it. Life happens, but come back home, because the thing I care about most is your heart. I want your heart because I love you. And man, I think for some of us in this room today, even myself, I was writing this week, that he was knocking on my heart again. Because here's what I know. He doesn't just knock once. You don't just have like a salvation experience and the rest of it is for you to figure out. He's knocking on the doors of our hearts every morning, every night. I love you. And the point of it is that you would know my love and you'd be ignited by my love and you would be led and live your life by my love. So this idea of comfortability, of complacency, like, yeah, like, I get it. But that's not the point. The point is that I just want your heart to love me again. So fall back in love with me. Come back home. Let's reignite the love we had for each other at first. Because that's how we're going to live risky. We're not going to live risky by mustering up enough courage to not be complacent or comfortable. We're going to live risky when our hearts are burning with a love for Jesus that's uncontainable. And then I can't keep it to myself. And so I got to share it with the world. I got to share it with my coworkers. And it doesn't just mean like I'm going to tell the gospel to everybody. But it means I'm going to be living a life of love and put Jesus on display with my whole life because I am so madly and deeply in love with him. And so, man, the risk of not risking is I risk my love for Jesus. And he wants to get me back to a place where he loves on me and I receive it and live that out.